After dinner, the drivers and other servants drifted across from their fires and gathered at a respectful distance around Jim and Louisa. The drivers smoked their long-stemmed clay pipes. The smell of the strong Turkish tobacco was rank on the sweet night air. This was one of the informal councils, which they called indaba, that had become a tradition of camp life over the months. Although most of them listened more than they spoke, every man present, from small boy, the head driver, to Izezi, the youngest herd boy, knew that he was entitled to state his views as strongly as he felt inclined. They were all nervous. At even the most ordinary night sounds, they started and peered out into the darkness beyond the walls of the laager. The yipping of a jackal might be the rallying call of the Nguni pickets. The whisper of the night wind in the thorn trees along the river bank might be the sound of their war rattles. The rumbling hooves of a stampeding herd of wildebeest, frightened by a marauding pride of lions, might be the sound of assegais drumming on rawhide shields. Jim knew that his men had come to him to seek reassurance. Though he was younger than any of the adults, except Zama, he spoke to them like a father. He told them of the battles they had fought already, and singled them out one by one to praise their feats, their steadiness in the heat of the action, and the terrible losses they had inflicted on the enemy. He did not forget the part played by the herders and the voorloopers, and the boys grinned with pride. "You have proved to me, and yourselves, that the Nguni cannot prevail against our horses and muskets, as long as we stand firm and hold hard." When they drifted away at last from the campfire to their own mattresses, their mood had changed. They chatted cheerfully among themselves, and their laughter was unfeigned. "They trust you," Louisa said quietly. "They will follow you where you lead them." She was silent a moment, and then she said, so softly that he barely caught the words, "And so will I." She paused. Then, "Come," she said, took his hand, and pulled him to his feet. Her voice was firm and decided. Before this, she had always come to him surreptitiously once the rest of the camp was asleep. Now she went openly with him to his wagon. She could hear the murmur of other voices in the darkness and knew that the servants were watching them. It did not deter her. "Hand me up," she said, when they reached the rear steps of the wagon. He stooped and lifted her in his arms. She placed both her arms around his neck and pressed her face into its curve. He made her feel as small and light as a child as he carried her up the ladder and brushed through the curtain of the afterclap. "I am your woman," she told him. "Yes." He laid her on the cardel bed. "And I am your man." He stood over her and stripped off his clothing. His body was pale and strong in the lamplight. She saw that he was fully aroused and felt no revulsion. She reached out unashamedly and took him in her hand, her thumb and fingers barely encompassing his girth. He was as hard as if he had been carved from a branch of ironwood. The tips of her breasts ached with wanting him. She sat up and unlaced the front of her tunic. "I need you, Jim. Oh, how I need you," she said, still staring at him. He was rough with haste, his need surpassing hers. He pulled off her boots, then stripped off her breeches. Then he stopped and stared in awe at the pale golden cluster of curls in the fork of her thighs. "Touch me," she said, her voice husky. For the first time he laid his hand upon the entry port to her body and soul. She let her thighs fall apart, and he felt the heat almost scald his fingertips. Gently he parted the fleshy lips, and slippery beads of moisture anointed him. "Hurry, Jim," she whispered, and clasped him again. "I can bear it no longer." She tugged at him insistently, and he fell forward on top of her. "Oh, God, my little hedgehog, how I love you." His words were choked. Clasping him in both her hands, she tried to guide him into herself. But there was a moment when she thought she was too small for him. "Help me," she cried again, and placed both hands upon his buttocks. She pulled him towards her desperately and felt the hard, round muscles convulse under her hands as he thrust forward with his hips. She cried out incoherently, for he was cleaving her apart. It was pleasure driven to the frontiers of agony. Then, suddenly, he forced his way past all resistance, and she felt the full slithering length of him. She screamed, but when he tried to pull back, she locked both legs over his back to hold him. "Don't leave me," she cried. "Don't ever leave. Stay with me forever." When he woke, the first light of dawn was pearling the canvas curtain of the afterclap. She was awake and watching him, lying quietly with her head on his bare chest. When she saw his eyes open, she traced with her forefinger the shape of his mouth. "When you sleep, you look like a little boy," she whispered. "I will prove to you that I am a big boy," he whispered back. "I want you to know, James Archibald, that I am always open to proof." She smiled, then sat up and placed her hands on his shoulders to pin him down. In one lithe movement, as though she were mounting Trueheart, she straddled his lower body.